Great. So we're talking about the fear of fundraising as one of the pitfalls. It is one of those things that for some of us we're happy and comfortable in this kind of area, but for a lot of us it is something that gives us quite a bit of tension thinking about money, finances, and particularly approaching people to help us with that. Talking about giving, so it's really getting to that point of being comfortable with that kind of ministry, that is gospel ministry. Just to say from the outset, I've put together a kind of a course on the LCPA website, which is a kind of a 101 on this kind of stuff. So I'm not going to try and condense that there. That's kind of 10 lessons. There's various links and resources and stuff. It's not perfect by any means. It's not the final word, but I have been trying to get some advice from a few sort of, you might call them experts in this kind of field. Who've sort of looked through some of the material and it given me feedback. I'm actually having a Zoom with someone tomorrow, who's based in Australia and works particularly in this area of particularly encouraging organizations which have been having some sort of seed funding to get to that point of being self-sustaining. So he's going to be sort of working with us a bit, hopefully doing some videos and stuff for us. So there's the link to that particular course, and it's free to use. So if that's something that's helpful, then go for that. You don't have to work through it in sequence, so you might be able to just sort of dive in at the place where it talks about trusts, for example, or approaching individuals or budgeting or something. So if there's something that's helpful there, that's great. So I won't kind of bore you or waste your time by trying to rattle through everything that's there. I'll try and give you a few other things, which I found helpful, and just a few highlights. But then, as I say, we could work on some sort of specific stuff. Just something that just read yesterday, actually, which struck me as kind of relevant to this. It's a Christmas kind of verse, isn't it? Mary's Magnificat, where she sings, "The Lord has brought down rulers from their thrones. He has lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things, but has sent the rich away empty." I think it's just kind of worth putting that up there at the beginning, that Luke's gospel, as you know, has kind of got a lot to say about money. It talks very directly and frankly about money. But it's all in this context of this great reversal, this really shocking thing that I think should tee us up right from the beginning to think that God's ways are very different to our ways. He is humbling the proud and the rich. And you can, you know, trace that theme all the way through the gospel, the rich young ruler, Zacchaeus. You know, people are transformed, absolutely transformed in a very practical way. Those who have been holding on to their finances, release them. You get that into Luke Acts, don't you? When you go into the book of Acts, you get people selling fields, you know, selling massive assets, like really major giving. This is not a small transformation that happens here. But he's a generous God. He's filled the hungry with good things. He is a generous God, and so he takes ungenerous people and he can transform them, make them generous. But that involves a humbling. And that's a painful humbling that happens there. That's just a kind of a marker post to just put in there at the beginning. Now, this thing here, this is seven kinds of money. So this is just to throw this out there to you, just to get the kind of the juices going in a sense. This is based on something that Richard does on five sorts of money. I don't know if you've come across that. So I've basically just taken what he's done and just added a couple more. And trying to put it in a chart sort of thing, but it's leaning heavily on what Rich has done. So he's basically saying, you know, there are different places the money comes from, and you need to think what it's for, and some things are appropriate to particular causes. So, for example, if it's regular costs you're looking at, if you're looking at the main, just the basic church budget, your salary, rent for the building, all that kind of stuff, then really you want that to come from congregational giving. And not sporadic congregational giving or yearly special appeals. You want it to come from regular standing order and people giving as a proportion of their income. You know, obviously in some cultures and societies, it's very normal for people to think that that's the 10%. More commonly, certainly in our context here, it tends to be more like 5%, which is interesting, but that tends to be what it is. But it's as a proportion of income. That's how it's presented to you, present to the church, explain, teach on giving. We'll talk about that a bit later in terms of cultivating a culture of generosity. But there's teaching on giving, teach on membership. So it's right from the outset. This is part of the whole thing of becoming part of our church. This is what we do. We give to the work of the church as a proportion of our income. Now, a different thing is the kind of legacy stuff. So this is kind of big stuff that's going to last. So it tends to be buildings, but it could be something else. It could be setting up some particular ministry. It could be some particular kind of mission initiative, but it tends to be something that's going to last and that people are going to be able to say, at least to themselves, to their children, you know, this was something that happened 20 years ago. We invested in this and it's here. So that kind of big stuff, it's like taking a step change in the church. This is different from the regular giving. This is going to need a serious injection of finances, and that's not going to come from proportion of people's income. It's going to come from savings, basically. Dundonald, as you know, raised about 3 million a couple of years ago, just before we arrived. So it wasn't anything, I wasn't in any way involved in it. Didn't really see it at all until we arrived and heard that this had just happened, that the congregation had given I think it's now 3.2 million towards the new building. Now, where did that come from? It didn't come from people's salaries. It came from savings, basically. You can't give most people can't give tens of thousands out of their salaries, but they, quite a few people can do that, particularly in our area, from savings, from inheritance. You know, when parents sadly die, it's quite possible. Some people inherit debts, but other people inherit an inheritance, and we might put some of it aside towards future education costs for our kids, maybe. I hope they go to university or something like that. But there quite often be something there that is being kept and can be accessed. And so that's a case of kind of presenting to the church. This is this big, bold project that we're going to do. This is why we're doing it. It's a gospel vision. This is going to be here for future generations. And give examples, perhaps, of examples from the Bible, like Barnabas. But examples, concrete examples, not with names, but examples of how it is possible for people to say, okay, there's, I've got a capacity to give 10, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 from this. There'll still be something there. I'm not absolutely scraping the barrel, but this is something that I could turn from sitting in a bank account doing nothing to something which is actually in active gospel service. Actually, isn't that exciting to take something from just not earning very much interest? There's hardly any interest at all on anything at the moment, to take it out there and put it to work. Wouldn't that be exciting? Sometimes housing I put that down there because people do talk about kind of remortgaging houses. I think that happened a bit for the Dundonald giving project. I mean, people feel differently about that. I mean, in some ways it's taking on more debt, which kind of doesn't always sit very comfortably, but it could be that in a fairly secure and not particularly risky way, someone is quite happy to extend their mortgage a bit. It's quite small. They could make it a bit bigger, and that's still quite achievable to pay off over the next few years. It could be that they have an extra house. I mean, some people do actually have an extra house. People have might have that capacity to give that house, to sell that house and give the do a Barnabas type thing. It can happen, and I've seen it happen, and I know it can happen. So it's just giving those examples. Now, in some contexts, obviously, That will kind of go straight over people's heads, and they think, well, that's got absolutely nothing to do with me at all. I haven't got any savings. I haven't got an extra house. What are you talking about? But in some contexts, that is a thing. And it can be, in the right context and appropriately and sensitively, sometimes it's right to share those kind of examples and say, there is something that's possible, while not despising the widow's mite and the fact that actually something that's given from the heart in a small way is also massively valued by God. So that's one, that's another source of money. Another source of money is, we're talking business people, professionals, those are on a pretty decent salary, maybe people who are working in the city, and particularly projects this is about. So people like that tend to get excited about a project because they work in projects. They're kind of, they're familiar with the idea of a project. You have a proposal, it's for a particular period of time, and it costs X amount. And they kind of understand that. And they maybe don't get so excited about the kind of regular cost giving, but you've got a new project, a new, you know, you want to take on a youth worker, you want to take on an evangelist, or there's a new strategy, we want to do this, and it's going to cost this much. And with that, you know, what Richard would say is actually, as the senior pastor going and approaching, you know, one, two, three, four people and saying, and he said that, you know, the first question they'll ask is, how much is it? And you've already kind of worked it out. You've done your homework and you know, it's going to cost us 30,000 to employ this person and do this. And you've already divided it up in your mind and you've said, okay, so what I was thinking is that if I could approach you and a couple of other people, and if you could divide that up between you, then that would be possible. Or if I'm going to approach you and somebody else, if you could take kind of between you, take 20 of that, then I could go back to the church and ask for the extra 10. But I really feel that the church has had a really hard year. I can't approach them with 30,000, but I do think this would make all the difference for the gospel to have this person. That kind of a presenting the vision, business people are quite, you know, they're happy to say no, but they're happy to be approached with that kind of a vision. Crisis stuff is basically sort of squeezing out an extra bit basically when you really need it. So this is like, you don't want to do this every year, otherwise people realize this happens every year, but every few years, like maybe every 10 years, there's a really exceptional circumstance. And, you know, COVID is a pretty exceptional circumstance. There's some sort of crisis and there's a hole in the budget. And, you know, there's a serious hole, you know, whatever it is, 20,000, you're short. And at that point, it is possible to go to the congregation and say, if everybody in the congregation gave an extra 1% of their yearly salary in a one-off gift this Christmas, we could fix this problem, whatever it is. So for example, someone's earning 20,000 a year, that would be like £200. They're earning £30,300. Like if you're able to give that proportionate to, you know, above your normal giving, if you're able to give that one-off gift this Christmas, we could just deal with this problem and fix it. So that's that one. But yeah, you don't want to overuse that. If people see you overusing that, then it, you know, undermines everything. Trust funding trust funding you can apply to for all sorts of different things. Depends on the trust, but typically a lot of trusts want to kind of seed stuff. So not many trusts are interested in giving year after year after year after year after year. But quite a few of them are happy to give for 2, 3, 4 years to seed something, to get something started, whether it's a new post or a project or to make a start on a building project. You know, depending on what sort of trust it is, you research it, you find out what the trust aims are, and you see if the overlap with your aims, and if they overlap sufficiently and you can make that case, you apply. And you have to do whatever they say in terms of reporting, but that is possible. It's some work. It's not tremendously fruitful, but it can happen. I've done some of that recently myself. Another one is partner churches, and that tends to be for mission. So you can't really go to other churches and ask for just help with regular costs or even necessarily for building projects or stuff like that. But if you can package it as a mission opportunity, so we're taking on an extra evangelist, for example, or we're doing a sort of bold new strategy of a particular sort of door to door that we haven't done before, or we're starting up an international cafe or something. If it's a mission opportunity, it is possible that you can find partner churches, maybe the church that was behind originally planting you, or part of your network, or a friendly church, and you know, develop that relationship, invest in that relationship, explain really clearly to them what this mission opportunity is, because even if they know you well, they might misunderstand what it is you're trying to do, and then basically apply to them as a mission partner. And it's sometimes a bit of a long shot, because a lot of churches, they already have lots of mission partners. They're not really up for taking on anymore. It moves very slowly, because as you know, churches and PCCs and stuff move very, very slowly, but it can happen. And it can be really lovely, actually. And it can be a very kind of New Testament sort of thing, you know, one church investing in and being excited about being in mission partnership with another church. And there are increasingly a number of churches do have an overseas kind of portfolio and a UK portfolio, and they're, you know, maybe they'd love to be partnering with you. And then the final one is kind of sort of secular government agencies, charities, trusts. They might be willing to support a social care type project. You obviously have to do that with integrity. You don't want to be sort of shoehorned into their agenda. You don't want to kind of you need to be able to present honestly to them what you're going to be doing. But it's possible that they might be willing to fund something which they can see is a faith-based initiative and fits in that kind of category, and is clearly delivering something useful. So there may be grants, there may be things that you can apply to there. They tend to be quite onerous in terms of reporting and compliance, but it's not impossible. It can be done. Any questions on any of those seven that I've just rattled through there? Are there things that you've had experience with, things that you've tried, haven't worked, other categories that you can think of? Yeah, Rob?
Yeah, I just think more familiar with the top couple of rows, really, than as it goes further down. Just to comment on, you said about context as well. I think, you know, large amounts of money sitting away within the terms of the congregation, unless it's that they die and they give the place that they've spent their whole life, you know, paying towards. That's the only kind of legacy that I think that they'd be able to give from this kind of context, which actually some people have approached us about, some of our early congregations. So that's really encouraging. But it means that if there is larger sums of money that we're looking for from this context, we need to upskill ourselves, I think, to be able to approach people. I mean, Christians are very generous, and we found that through and through. And we found it mainly from churches. So churches have been generous from more well-off areas. So we found that our larger sums of money from outside have come from churches.
That's great. Yeah, thanks, Rob. And that's praise God that people have been approaching, you know, you in terms of legacies and wills and stuff like that, because that's it's a sensitive area, isn't it? It's not one that you can necessarily move towards, but if people come towards you, that's a that's a wonderful thing, isn't it? Yeah. John, did you want to say something?
Well, no, just I mean, so the thing we're thinking about at the moment, or we're just starting to think about, so part of the proposal for me coming was that they were going to help us to buy a house in the area. And so we're just starting that process, and we're looking, looking at kind of a few of these different categories to try and do that. So be interesting to kind of think through some more of that as we go along. And the church here have absolutely no experience of doing this. So we have been, my father-in-law was a treasurer at an FIEC church previously, and has been quite helpful. But I'm sure there are other churches out there that have got good models that would be able to help us to think it through as well. But I'm finding it really difficult because I don't feel like I can push it too much. Mm. And I'm kind of, hoping my fellow elder will, push this and lead it, but he's not really doing as much as I think he could be and should be doing. But I find that slightly uncomfortable. I have pushed it a bit because it does need to move on, because the house we're in is great, but it's falling apart, and they're not really taking responsibility for it. So I'm moving on. But so it's a live issue, I guess, for us.
Yeah, no, that's a really helpful, important, concrete one to talk about as well. I'm aware of a planter on the south coast who's they're going through exactly this thing at the moment and trying to work out what to do in terms of whether to try and buy the house that they're renting at the moment, whether to try and get a number of people in the church together to buy a house. And that's one way of going. I mean, these things get very complicated, obviously, in terms of financially and legally to set up, but it is possible. And I have heard it done of three Christians in a church buying a house together. Also, I've heard it of people who, again, you might think these people don't exist, but they do exist, who are able to buy a house as an investment and say, right, we're going to buy this. I'm going to buy this house, and you're going to maintain it for me, basically, and live in it for the next 10 years. And then I'll have it back, please. And I haven't lost anything by buying that house. It's gone up in price. You've maintained it and looked after it for me. Another way to do it is, this person can't buy the house outright, but they could buy it with a mortgage, and then you basically pay the rent just to pay the mortgage. And then, in 10, 15, 20 years time, they get it back without a mortgage and, a serious asset. So there are different ways to do it. I think this guy that I was talking to on the South Coast was saying, it is difficult doing it for yourself. And so what he's trying to do is the sort of appeal is to get basically get a house for an incoming assistant minister. Like, they want to have an assistant minister. So it's a kind of a mission package of, like, wouldn't it be great if we had an assistant minister? He's going to need to live somewhere. And so, let's work out how we can get a house for him. But then that house can be owned by the church, basically, and is an asset. It's, in a sense, that's what they did at Balham. I don't know if the guys in Balham have had that sort of housing appeal to get a house for Johnny Burgess to live in, basically. But I think it is really worth thinking through these kind of things, because housing is it's a massive cost on the budget line, but it's also potentially a massive asset for a church to have, and a ministry resource as well for meetings and stuff, when we're finally able to actually go inside each other's houses. It's really important to think those sort of things through. Okay, we can come back to that stuff, but let me just move through a couple of other things. Just different sorts of givers. You could add to this list. There's in some ways it's individual as people, but there are different sorts of givers, different reasons why people give, and it is worth being aware of that. Some people are giving to you, so they actually, the reason they're giving is because they're really giving to your ministry. So I'm talking about kind of ministry partnerships here. You might have someone in another church or Someone who's wanting to support you and your ministry because of you and because of the relationship they have with you and perhaps the way that they've been blessed by your ministry in the past. Some people are giving to a place, to a project, to a church, to the church they love, to a place that they grew up in, to a ministry that they have been personally blessed by. Some people, though, want to give to a wider vision. So you might find with particularly some of these kind of, I mean, people call high net worth individuals and stuff. I mean, I don't particularly like that kind of terminology, but, you know, basically the guys who are able to invest serious amounts of money in gospel work, often, this is something that Richard said, and I found it to be true myself as well, often they're more excited about a wider vision that goes across more than one church. So you often find that those who've got serious funds to invest, they're actually get more excited about a vision, which is wider than just this church. So for example, I'm thinking of you, Sergey, with, you know, if you have a vision to actually see a whole network of Russian speaking churches across London, they might get more excited about that than the particular plant where you are. Does that make sense? Or someone might get excited about seeing different evangelical tribes working together. I think a lot of a number of these guys who have significant funds have seen the kind of the infighting and have been approached from different angles by different people who are kind of competing, and they actually get really excited and find it really refreshing to find, oh, you know, you're a FIC church, but you're working with this and you're working with this and you're working with that, and you know, they're excited about that, and that sort of generosity of spirit that they see in your whole kind of ministry strategy, they warm to that. Some people are giving for legacy, in the sense that they do want to feel they've invested in something that will last, and they can really feel like I really made a difference and a step change to this particular ministry. Some people are giving for leverage, and I guess that's one to be wary of. Some people might want to give so that they can have a controlling interest in something, or even leverage with God himself. You know, they could be giving in that sense of for some sort of sense of having some sort of leverage and power in the situation. Yeah, I don't know how common that is. I guess we've all got mixed motives, but it's just worth being aware of.
And it's fairly common for people from sort of slightly more Eastern impressions of Christianity to want to give gifts in order for God to give them, like, the ability to conceive. Mm. So there's a sort of, you know, if we give to the temple, if we give to the, you know, whatever it is, then we might be able to have a child, and possibly, I guess, in African settings as well. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, certainly. I think, the sort of prosperity gospel that is quite prevalent in a lot of places would, go in that kind of direction.
Mm. Which I think is really, like, if you can be a church where you do, where you're talking about money, but you don't do it so sort of in your face, I think for people coming in from a prosperity experience, like, well, I think can think of one guy in our church. If he tells his friends, people he knows, that he's been in the church for a couple of years and people haven't asked him for money, they just can't believe that. You know, they just can't believe that there would be, you know, that the money isn't at the forefront of the preaching of God's word. Now, we probably do need to ask him for money at some point, but for him that was particularly helpful to be able to see there's a completely different culture.
We'll talk about that in a bit, but I mean, it's certainly very, yeah, it's a very, very prominent part of some church cultures. I went to a Ghanaian church in Dagenham, I think it was. And you had your sort of 40-minute sermon or something, but then there was another sort of 20-minute sermon just for the giving, that just before the giving, just to really get us excited, and lots of amazing stories and stuff. Something that, yeah, that is very prominent in some places. I mean, but it can also happen in when I was in Wandsworth, there was a guy who owned a kind of hardware shop quite near the church, and so we quite often pop in there to get something, to, I don't know, fix something up in the church. And I went in there a couple of times, and he tried to give me the stuff for free. I'll just have this kind of gaffer tape, or whatever it was, I need to do my bit for the church or something. And it was basically his way of saying, like, I don't want to ever come to the church and listen to your stuff, but like, if I give you a roll of gaffer tape, then I feel like, I'm all right with God, so that was an unhealthy thing. But some people do give because they need to. I don't know, again, how common this is, but I've just met one or two people who maybe they've had a bonus or something, and they really just felt they needed to give it. And God has just put that burden on their heart. You just really need to give this away to something. They weren't really bothered about what it was going to, So there was a particular chap who gave towards us when we were in Kenya. And I just got the feeling he didn't read any of our prayer letters or anything. He really wasn't particularly interested in what we were doing. But just for his own sake, he needed to give that money. Which isn't necessarily, it would have been lovely if it had been a stronger partnership and there'd been more sort of interest there. But in a sense, it was more about he just needed to give that stuff. In terms of, there are different sort of levels of partnership as well. And this is just kind of recognizing that people do have different capacities to give because of where they are at the moment. And it's just worth, when you, particularly this is when you're fundraising for a particular thing. So I'm thinking here about your fundraising for a post or some kind of project. This isn't so much about congregational giving. This is more like you're looking for a certain amount of money that you need. It's worth segmenting that, worth kind of breaking it down into what would that actually look like. So I'm trying to get 12,000 a year. How am I expecting that to come in? Being a bit realistic here, that's not going to, it depends on your context, but it might not come from two people giving 6,000 each. Also, it's not probably going to come through, 1,200 people giving £10 each, because there just aren't that many people. You just got to break it down realistically. How could that come in? Well, it could come through four people giving 100 a month, 10 at 50 a month, and 10 at £10 a month. That's possible. That is achievable in certain contexts. That can happen. This sort of happens in mission fundraising all the time. And that is so helpful practically, because when you talk to people, or approach them for funding, one of the first things people will say, particularly if they're a bit more business minded, is how much do you need? And you need to know how much you need, and you need to, and to follow that up with, I need 12,000 a year. And what we were thinking is that could come through, four people giving 100, 10 people giving 50, and 10 people giving 10. And then that's giving them some ideas. It's not saying you need to choose one of them, but it kind of is offering those as possibilities. And then someone can think, okay, yeah, I couldn't do that, but I could do that. Just one story that was, I think, God really encouraging us personally. When we just started off trying to raise support for our budget going to Kenya, we were really feeling quite kind of anxious about that and thinking, I'm really not up for doing this. But we came up with our list of people and we started kind of thinking, yeah, we really got to start writing letters and phoning people and stuff. And on that day when we were thinking this through, and we just come up with our sort of segmented thing of this many people giving this much, this guy phoned me up out of the blue, and he was in that category of he just needed to give, really. And he just heard on the grapevine that we were going to be going overseas somewhere, and he said, I'd love to support that. It's like, okay, you know, this wasn't solicited at all. He phoned me up and he said, you know, how much do you need? And I said, well, we need this much. And we were thinking it could probably be 10 people giving this, 20 people giving this. And straight away he said, you know, sign me up for that highest amount. So it's like, and I went back inside because I took this call in the garden. I went back inside and I talked to Susie and I said, you know, I don't know what quite happened there, but like, I don't think it's supposed to work like this, but like this guy actually phoned us up. And you know, fortunately, I had something to say, and by God's grace, that was our first partner. And I think that was, you know, it didn't all happen like that. Most of it happened there's one other occasion like that, but most of it was we had to phone people and stuff. But I think God was just encouraging us. There are people out here who just do want to be supportive. And I've already kind of set these things up, and you just need to talk to these people. But I think that can be practically helpful just to segment things a bit. In terms of some of the things that really maybe stop us doing this at all, and you'd be interested to know which ones of these kind of particularly resonate or you want to add to this. But I think one is shame, just in terms of it feels like you're begging, and that's quite a shameful thing. Rejection, so we don't like disturbing relationships, we don't like getting money involved in relationships, we don't like the thought of someone saying no or being uncomfortable or not answering our email or rejecting us. Dependence, it is quite a kind of it feels quite weak to be dependent on other people, to be dependent on their giving, to put yourself below people and depend on them. Reputationally, I think we are concerned, rightly, as Rob was saying, we're concerned about the reputation for the gospel. We don't want to kind of seem like prosperity gospel people or televangelists. We are concerned, though, also partly for our own reputation and whether we're the person who's always asking for money. Manipulation, again, you know, it's a right concern that we don't want to be manipulating people. We don't want to be putting pressure on people. We don't want to be people to be giving out of guilt or emotionally. Perhaps also we don't want to be manipulated by other people who might be giving us money. Also, we might fear that this is anti-evangelistic, that this is just a burden to the, you know, it's a barrier to the gospel. It's going to turn people off. We don't want to be talking about money at church. We want to be talking about Jesus. The legalistic thing, yes, yeah, so we don't want people to think, you know, there's these things you have to do to be saved, that as a Christian or to become a Christian, that we have to give God something. Also, we might feel just this whole area is a big distraction. We just don't want to be talking about money. It'd be better if we just weren't. We could just get on with things. This is a whole distraction of our time, and it's a distraction from the big thing we want to be talking about the gospel. Also, we might just feel, look, this is ineffective. I've tried it. It didn't work. I can't even be bothered to try because, to be honest, no one's going to give me money. So it's not worth trying. Or we might say it's unnecessary. We might be in the privileged position where actually people are giving okay, actually. And we have got the finances there. We're doing okay. And actually, I don't need to teach about giving or money or make any kind of efforts in this regard, because actually it's fine. You know, I've got a salary, it's coming in, it's okay. Do any of those kind of resonate, or any ones that you feel kind of rising up in you in this kind of area when you start moving towards this?
Not particularly, actually. I think, I don't know if it's just Mike's influence, but I think it's a really helpful one that he kind of stressed with me, that actually people giving finances of what they earn is actually a sign of spiritual maturity and spiritual growth. So that kind of does undermine a lot of these fears and defeaters, doesn't it? It's to say that it is actually my job as a pastor to know how people are doing spiritually, whether it's just something on the surface that they say on a Sunday or whether it is something that goes deeper than that.
Yeah.
And although we don't know, you know, I don't need to know the amounts necessarily that people are giving, I do need to know if people are giving or if they're not, in order to sort of see whether they've grown at all, in terms of what they're hearing of the gospel. So I've done something recently which I found helpful. Just this last week, our trust, the guy who does our accounts, has told me how many giving units, so people within the church, are giving, and he's given me a number for that. It was 14, it's now 15. It was 14 in April, it's now 15. So I don't need to know who they are, but what that does as well, is it helps it in terms of working out when, or keeping a track of, if our finances are on the downturn, if people drop off, then it's easier for him to track, because we had actually had someone externally from the church who was given £100 a month who stopped in July, and we've only just realized, and it's December. So there, it is quite important for us to sort of keep track of where the money's coming from, and to detect when it stops coming, because not just so that we can say to people, oh, you have to start giving again, because that's not what we want to say. We want to say thank you for giving what you have been able to give. And I'm able to write a Christmas newsletter to say we understand that the this year will have changed people's financial situation, and we understand that completely, so don't feel under any guilt if you're not able to give anymore. But like, the fact that we only just realized now in December that a guy had stopped giving £100 a month, and we're only a small church with a small bank account, you know, that means that if we'd left it any longer, we would have been £1,500 or whatever down without even realizing it. So I think there is an obligation to keep some kind of tabs on what's coming in.
Thank you, Rob. That's really helpful.
Work out a way to do that. That you can go with it.
Really helpful. So having a treasurer who's on the ball, but also is able to give you the giving units, how many people, and is that going up or down?
That came through Stephen Haffel's training, I think, the giving units thing, because it's households basically. And if you have, the more units you have, in some ways, the more secure your ongoing funding is going to be, because one or two people might drop out.
Yes.
But if you've got more units, then that's a smaller percentage of your overall giving, isn't it? So that's one way of looking at it.
Thank you.
And that says a different story to the amount, because the amount, the percentage of the internal giving is quite good compared to our outside, but 14 or 15 shows that it's actually only half of the people in the congregation are giving to the work of the church. So that gives more of a clear indicator of where we're at as a church, I think.
Yeah, thank you. That's really helpful. I mean, the thing you said there as well about the whole idea that it shows the spiritual health of people, I think is great. So, I mean, there's loads of places you could go, but Philippians 4, I think, I love the way that at the end of that, Paul says, basically, I didn't actually need your money. You know, it's nice of you to do that, but I didn't need it. I was fine, actually. But it was good. What Paul is excited about is that it displays partnership between churches, which he's very excited about. So there's that partnership sharing language. You shared with me, you're mission minded, you're concerned about the spread of the gospel, you're got that inter-church connection. He's really excited about that. And he's excited about what it says about their spiritual health, that is credited to their accounts. Not the sense of makes them more righteous, but it does exactly as you said, Rob, or Mike said, that it does show their spiritual health. And he's really excited about that. And it pleases God. It is something that God smells and goes like, that smells really good. That is really wonderful that my people are being generous. So even if your funding was fine and looked really secure, you'd still want to see that growth in giving units, that growth in generosity, because of these things, because it does show people's where people's hearts are. It shows their mission-mindedness, and it pleases God, basically. And also, they are going to be blessed as they do that. Not necessarily financially, but God will meet their needs as they do that. He won't be anyone's debtor. We don't want to go into the prosperity gospel thing of, you know, you give £10, you get £100, sort of rubbish. But the one who refreshes others will be refreshed. It is more blessed to give than to receive, which is primarily written to elders, obviously, and pastors. But it is a general thing that you will be blessed by giving. So actually to not give people the opportunity to give is actually robbing them of a blessing and a privilege and a grace and an opportunity to grow. And that was something that I really had to kind of like really get into my head as I was sort of, I'm somebody who sort of finds it difficult to approach people. I had to do this recently. I was doing some fundraising for 938 and I just found it emotionally quite grueling because you're sort of putting yourself out there. You're spending time crafting emails or letters or trying to get up the courage to phone someone. I found it quite emotionally draining myself, but I had to just keep reminding myself I'm actually going to be robbing someone of a potential blessing if I don't give them that opportunity to partner in this. And I think that's really, really important to kind of keep in mind. I don't know if just briefly, if someone could reflect on an experience of trying to do that, whether it was congregationally or approaching a trust or an individual, where you were actually putting yourself out there and seeking some funding, you know, how did that go? You know, positive or negative?
Yes, especially our situation. We have planted our church from the scratch, and half of our members from Orthodox background. And Orthodox background is very interesting because, as usual in Orthodox churches, they have a price for different. Things for wedding, for funeral, yes. And usually people in our context, they think it's okay to have a price. But when they started thinking about Protestant church or Reformed church, they started to think about prosperity gospel. It's very interesting. It's like, in our case, we need to bring truth for them about truth, about giving, about generosity, and we need to teach them properly through the Bible. In our case, after 2 years, I'm really happy about we have some mature Christians who has been learned about giving in previous churches. But we have some people from Orthodox churches, new Christians, and we need to teach them. And so right now I'm between how it might be and another way how to teach about giving and people understand us. We are not doing ministry for money. We're not doing ministry for and right now we're between these questions. And one of the biggest question about how to do this, because 6 months ago we're gathering in community hall, and people, they understood about we are gathering in community hall, we're buying food, and we need to thinking about rent and something like that. But right now we have gathering through the Zoom, and people don't understand why I need to donate money? Because we have a gathering through the Zoom, and I hope we need to prepare plan in the future when we back to normal and started talking about what Bible talk about giving. Yes.
Yeah, thank you, Sergey. And I guess particularly the awkward thing there is it feels hard talking about giving towards your own salary and towards your own upkeep. It's one thing talking about rent, isn't it? And yeah. How we need to, even a building project or how we need to get, you know, some money for coffee and stuff after church.
Yes.
But it's hard to talk about your own. So maybe finding somebody who really gets this, who's part of your core team, who can say that for you and say, look, we need to support our pastor. You know, that is a New Testament thing. And
yes.
You know, Sergey and his family don't live on fresh air. We need to support them. So I think, involving someone else who can say that might be helpful. I mean, we won't watch this, but I would encourage you to there's a kind of a video link there from Matthias Media that they put out a few months ago on the Generosity Project. I don't know if you've come across the Generosity Project. It's something they put together a while ago. It's a book, but also it's some video resources and stuff trying to help churches to think generously. That video is basically the guy who put together that resource saying how it was pandemic time, it was coronavirus time, and he was thinking, this is such a rubbish time to launch a resource on generosity. Nobody's going to be interested in this now. It feels almost kind of bad to talk about people giving when they're obviously under pressure and stuff. But actually, for various reasons that you can find on that video, they decided actually this was a good time actually to talk about generosity. And I think that transfers to churches as well. It's not actually a bad time at the moment to talk about generosity. Particularly in terms of a church plant, there's going to be that reticence. There's going to be people holding back and thinking, is this thing going to really work? Do I really want to be part of this? And that holds a lot of people back from giving, certainly giving a proportion, a serious proportion of their salary. They might give a little bit, but they're holding back. And actually, it is important to take people on that journey of getting them to a commitment. And it can be part of their commitment to a church to say, okay, actually, yeah, I am going to set up a standing order. And then the heart goes where the resources are, doesn't it? You know, that's how our hearts work. They go where we're investing our resources and we do actually decide this is what we're part of. Also, I think, like you were saying, Sergey, people come to church with all sorts of different assumptions. And if we don't teach on this stuff explicitly, then they will just have all their old assumptions, which might be good, might be rubbish. And so that we do need to clear, they're not going to magically get some perfect understanding of giving. We will need to teach on it. Also, we do need to challenge the idols of our culture, which, and one of the big idols is materialism. It is money. And so if we're kind of like just going around that, we're just accommodating it. And we're not doing what Jesus does, which is goes up to the rich young ruler and puts his finger on exactly the thing that is his idol. And that's a very uncomfortable thing. But with God, all things are possible and he can even crush that idol. We want to be countercultural. We want to have a churches where the way we think about money, the way that we think about who owns our resources, the way that we talk about it, or the fact that we talk about it, whereas perhaps our culture doesn't. You know, all those things are different to the world. So I think we'll probably have to leave it there. There's various different things we could do in terms of talking about how to actually generate that kind of generosity culture, but I think we probably need to at least allow people to head off at this point. But any kind of final sort of questions or thoughts on this area? No. Okay. Well, we can talk about it another time. If you do want to kind of talk about specific stuff, then do feel free to give me a ring or something, or we can chat about them. If you do want to get into that course, as I say, then do that and give us feedback on stuff that isn't helpful there. If you can pick up that Generosity Project book, I think it's quite, that could be helpful. But let me pray, and then let us go off to lunch. Lord God, thank you that you are a generous God, that you fill the hungry with good things, and you have filled us, Lord. You have given us your Lord Jesus, the your Son, the bread from heaven. You have filled us, you have satisfied us with him, so that we never need hunger again. You've prepared a banquet for us. You've prepared the new creation for us. You've given us church family. You've given us everything. And please would you make us generous. Please would you help us to be generous, even as we think about this whole area of generosity, when we're tempted to maybe get annoyed or frustrated or bitter about it, about people not giving. Please help us to remember your patience with us and your generosity towards us, and how far we have to go individually on this. But we pray that you would give grace to the congregations represented on this Zoom now, to grow in this area of generosity. Praise you for stuff that's happening, like in Beacon Tree, and Lord, please would you be working in these different situations, that there might be more giving units, in the sense that there might be more families, households that are able to participate in that grace of giving, in a way that glorifies you and brings praise to you, as well as resources, this work. Pray this wouldn't be an area of like great anxiety or struggle or shame, but would actually be there would actually be moments of joy in this as more partners get on board from inside and outside the church. Pray that in Jesus' name. Amen.